This is CHUO 89.1 FM. Welcome to this week's episode of The Mosaic, your weekly show highlighting the voices of the community. Here, we guide you through today's social issues, introduce you to changemakers, and keep in touch with the arts, music, and events of the city. You can expect extensive research, in-depth analysis, and discussion. From CHUO's news team, this is The Mosaic.
Today, political unrest in Tibet. We learn about cultural cleansing and assimilation policies in the region. Then, we hear from a local artist, Ryan Mendoza, about his journey to Ottawa and preparing for the upcoming production of Guys and Dolls. Finally, we take a stab at explaining the carbon tax. Stick around. I'm Noah Blatt. We've got all that and more coming up on The Mosaic. The Center for International Policy Studies held a discussion on democracy and human rights. In the UOttawa Social Sciences Building, panelists honed in on the People's Republic of China's assimilation policies in Tibet. Here with more information on the region and notes from the panel is CHUO's Arya Gunde.
Home of Mount Everest, Tibetan Buddhism, and the Dalai Lama, Tibet has long fascinated the Western imagination. Its unique culture and geography have been the inspiration for countless works of art around the world. But what many fail to realize is that this ancient culture is being lost to the tides of geopolitics. Since its annexation by the People's Republic of China in 1951, Tibet has been bordering on a constant state of political unrest, accounted for by numerous uprisings and attempted revolutions. To erase this strong sense of autonomy from the Tibetan people, China is actively engaged in a cultural cleansing campaign under the guise of assimilation and unity. Earlier this month, the Center for International Policy Studies at the University of Ottawa hosted a panel assessing these assimilation policies in Tibet.
The PRC aims to subsume Tibet's rich spiritual, linguistic, and cultural traditions into its political framework. And they have wasted no time. Beginning as early as 4 years old, Tibetan children are separated from their families and coerced into government-run boarding schools, where they are purposely restricted from learning their language, celebrating cultural events like Tibetan New Year or Losar, and practicing Tibetan Buddhism. More than 1 million students, or 3 in 4 school-aged Tibetan children, have been forcibly assimilated in these schools, all to serve a long-term goal of co-opting and reshaping Tibet's traditions.
That was the keynote speaker, Uzra Zeya, the United States Special Coordinator for Tibetan Issues. The panel also featured Dr. Namgyal Chodup, a representative of the Dalai Lama and the Office of Tibet in North America, and Dr. Tashi Rabge, a research professor of international affairs at George Washington University.
May of 1951, and that was the first time People's Republic of China offered the one country, two system model. And today our friends and brothers and sisters in Hong Kong and Taiwan understand that. And they remind us, yesterday it was Tibet, today it is Hong Kong, tomorrow it could be Taiwan.
Here we heard Dr. Chodup making the comparison between the PRC's actions in Tibet with their claims made on other territories surrounding mainland China. However, as Dr. Rabge explains, Tibet is inherently different.
The Tibetan Plateau, and it's a quarter of the People's Republic of China. It's a large territory. Now, that's the one thing that I think is really important to see is that how large the geophysical region of Tibet is, right? Just the geography of it. The other part of it, though, this is really important, is that when you go and travel through this geophysical region, from almost all of the major and rural and herding areas, the majority of the people are Tibetan. Which is to say that when you stand on Tibetan territory, Tibetans are not a minority at all. They are a majority of people.
She goes on to compare Tibet to modern-day Kurdistan, specifically the Turkic region. Here, the government of Turkey has pursued similar assimilation policies while disregarding the indigenous culture of the land. This approach has led to militancy and terrorism in the region, isolating it from the rest of Turkey. Dr. Rabge is concerned about this outcome, saying China has not set itself up for long-term success in Tibet. She brought up China's falling birth rates and the lack of a succession plan for Xi Jinping as reasons for impending failure. While looking ahead, Tibetans are challenged with preserving their culture against the CCP's mass propaganda campaign.
I think it's, not necessarily future, but it's happening right now. Mm-hmm. With many young Tibetans not being able to communicate in their mother tongue in Tibetan language.
Yeah.
Many of them, are not even aware about the concept of the political nature of Tibet conflict, and hence not being aware of about their rights to autonomy. Once you lose the sight of your rights to self-determination as a people that has identity different from Han Chinese, once you not realize that, you have a distinct history with a religion, culture, and language that is so different from the Han Chinese, I think, you do become assimilated and hence not see the need for, autonomy to practice your own culture.
Yeah.
So it is happening, and it is a big part of, as far as I see, it is a big part of the agenda for residential schools that are being implemented across Tibet.
Yeah.
There are stories about how, Tibetan children, when they come back from their residential schools in Tibet, back to their home, they're not being able to communicate with their grandparents who speak only Tibetan and not Chinese. And the children speak only Chinese and not Tibetan. So the parents and their elder brothers and sisters, they play the mediation role with communicating in Tibetan with their grandparents and children.
That was Sherab Turchin, the executive director of the Canada-Tibet Committee, detailing the situation. Later in our conversation, he revealed that Chinese repression might be the very reason the Tibet identity is still being invigorated in the youth.
Tibetan inside Tibet are still have this sense, where they have deep sense of being Tibetan identity, which may in some ways may be even stronger than those of us who live in exile.
Yeah.
We being exposed to various culture and not experiencing that oppression. Although we do, empathize with our brothers and sisters in Tibet, but they experience it in their lives on a daily basis through various, ways. So once you experience that kind of a repression directly or indirectly, I think you get a lot more resistant and resilience. And that is what, to me, was very encouraging, that they haven't given up.
In terms of politics, though, there are many questions left unanswered about Tibet. The most pressing one is what the Dalai Lama's succession is going to look like. On one hand, China will be appointing the next Dalai Lama to gain power over Tibetans, but the Dalai Lama says he will appoint his successor under his own authority.
Beijing will try to, select and impose its Dalai Lama on the Tibetan people, but the Tibetan, in the eyes of the Tibetan people, he won't have any legitimacy. That's a fact.
We find it quite funny that an atheist state, that calls for its right to the reincarnation, and many of our leaders have said that if they are very, if they do believe in the concept of reincarnation, if they're so worried about, reincarnation of Dalai Lama, they should start with finding the reincarnation of Mao Zedong and other Chinese leaders that have passed away.
For CHUO, I'm Arya Gunde.
This week, we were joined in the studio by Ryan Mendoza. He's a music producer from Winnipeg, who lived in Vancouver before heading to the capital. Now in a new city, here's his conversation with CHUO about coming to Ottawa, his music journey, and his upcoming performance in the vibrant musical romantic comedy, Guys and Dolls.
So you've been doing like audio engineering, and like I said, you're a singer, but a few months ago, you got a call. You're going to be Nicely Johnson in the production of Guys and Dolls.
Yes, so it's going to be the Guys and Dolls, the musical production under the Lost Baggage Musical Theater Company here in Ottawa. It's going to be happening April 25th to the 28th at Arts Court, so not too far off from us. But yeah, I got a call, I believe, back at the end of January for the role. Funny enough, I was at the gym when I got the... No, sorry, I was at work. It was the end of my shift, and I saw the phone ring from my side, but I couldn't answer it. And then iPhone has this feature where if it's on voicemail, you can read what they're trying to say to you in real time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so like the caption on the phone was like, it was like, hi, something, something, something. We're from the musical theater company. We would like to give you the role of Nicely Johnson. So I was reading it in real time.
Wow.
As she was doing the voicemail, but I couldn't answer it because I was still finishing my work. And then the moment I clocked off and got into the car, probably started screaming.
Yeah, you're enjoy. Pumped.
Yeah, I was so excited. I was like, no way.
That's crazy.
I know.
Because the audition story is actually kind of funny too. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but like, yes. Like walk us through that. What
yes.
happened
there? So I was at work during the day. I was on Facebook, funny enough, looking for Ottawa auditions of any sort, whether if it was a singing competition or a play or a musical. And they had a flyer of the musical theater company looking for cast members for the production. But when I already saw the ad, it was already full, like all the slots were full. Mm-hmm. And it was already that last day. But what I did anyways, I was like, might as well just ask them. I'm like, can I come in at the end of the night?
Yeah.
If there's even space. And they're like, yeah. And then here we are.
Yeah. Clearly it worked out, right?
I know.
And it's interesting because like you're new to Ottawa, so this was kind of like you looking to like get into the scene a little bit more.
Yes.
And also been a while since you've done theater, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
It's been a long while. Yeah, like 8 years.
8 years.
8 years, yeah.
Crazy, because you did high school acting as well?
Only, right? Yeah, only one musical in high school. That was it.
Okay, so yeah. This is like a jump into the deep end kind of, right?
Kind of, yeah. I kind of just went straight right into it. Yeah.
Right. And like I said, you just got here to Ottawa from Winnipeg, right?
What's yes, that originally from scene? Winnipeg, but I was from Vancouver prior to moving to Ottawa.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've moved around.
Yes.
I have an interesting question because your music is like very interesting. It's a nice blend of different tastes, but very like at its core R&B, mellow. And mm-hmm. I've seen that some of your work is inspired by the places that you've lived, like Vancouver, right? So like, can you tell me a little bit more about those different music scenes and how they've influenced you as an artist?
Yes. So let's say when I started my music journey in Winnipeg, overall the scene in Winnipeg isn't as loud or I say as busy as opposed to Vancouver.
Right.
If you guys have been to Vancouver, you probably know it is busy
mm-hmm.
and it's loud and it's kind of hectic. Then when I was making music in Vancouver, sometimes even if it was just coming from a trip in Vancouver or just coming from outside, just getting the energy off of people just because everything's very fast paced. And sometimes you see something like, you know, on the offside and it strikes an idea in your head and you're like, oh, wow. And then, you know, as I go home and then I make music, I'll be thinking about, you know, my experiences around Vancouver. And then, yeah, it becomes music.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And that's like 6 years that you've been doing music production, right?
Yes.
So like, what do you hope that experience of moving around, being a part of these different music scenes, years of growing, what do you think that you can take from that and bring to the character of Nicely?
Ooh, for me, from all the experiences I can gather and to bringing it into the character is just showing how versatile I can be.
Mm-hmm.
Just because even though I do R&B, like production-wise, I do R&B, I do hip-hop. When it comes to the singing end, I'm very heavy on Michael Bublé, Billy Joel,
nice.
Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. So very like complete spectrum, like opposite.
Wow.
So I would like to bring sort of like bits and pieces of each of those influences and somehow turn it into my own.
Oh, wow. And like... for those who don't know, because like we actually met Ryan before at the Pinoys on Parliament. So this is my question. So I would like to know, what do you see yourself with this character? What is the common thing that you see?
For me, what I see a lot is, funny enough, comedic timing. There's a lot of moments for the character where it's like, you know, short one-liners or like just these funny moments where there's something serious going on. And then let's say my character's response is like something that throws you off, but in a funny way. Mm-hmm. It's like, come on, man, like get it together. Let's get serious. But it's funny in the end.
Comedic relief. And then you also have iconic songs like Sit Down, You're Rockin' the
Boat. Yes, funny enough, I didn't know that that character had its own solo.
Yeah. Wow.
And then when I found out about it, I was like, okay, this is going to be great. This is going to be so fun.
How, like, so unexpected for an audition that you kind of squeezed in, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So, for our listeners that maybe haven't seen the movie or the production before, I really want to plant it in their head. This is like 1950s vibrant comedic musical.
Yeah, like very New York, 1950s. New Yorkers. Yeah.
Right, right.
The basis.
Can you yourself, in the work that you've been doing, because you've been collabing with the cast a lot, doing these rehearsals, I know you got another one tonight, can you give our listeners like a brief bio of what they can expect from the production?
So what you can expect from the production, like I said before, for a lot of comedy, but also a lot of love interests. So we are the supporting characters to the main characters. So the four main characters, they're kind of like two couples. Mm-hmm. So it's like the main character is a little bit, he's with a partner that has been wanting to get married for 14 years, but he's very indecisive and doesn't know how to make up his mind. And then the other couple that's a part of the musical became like a fresh couple together, but the female in that couple is from like a church mission group, and then the male of that couple is like a gangster. So there's like a conflict of interest, and it's like, is this supposed to happen? Is this not supposed to happen?
Yeah.
So a lot of like love interests, and then the comedy, but also a lot of dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I realized during the rehearsals there's quite a bit of dancing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And how does that suit you?
I'm not a dancer, but for this role, it helps because I don't have to be a good dancer, especially the character that I am. So it can be a little bit like comedic. It doesn't have to be, you know, sharp. It doesn't have to be good. As long as it's like playing the role, if I can like confidently dance but still look like my character, it works out.
It works out.
It works out.
That's great.
Yeah. Honestly.
I think you're going to lose of weight too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. All the sweating. I'm like, oh my goodness. And the room is like always so hot. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
But you can like dance and be like, you know, kind of, what do you call it? Like, not that perfect dance, but you can like fall a little bit. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. As long as you don't show to the audience that you made a mistake and you still go with it, they're not gonna know.
Yeah
exactly. They're actually not gonna know.
It was actually really on purpose, the thing that we just did over there.
Yeah they're like, oh, that's funny. Yeah exactly.
Well, that's great. And like we talked a little bit before about like musical influences in your life. It sounds like your family, your culture growing up, singing is huge, right?
Singing is very huge in the Filipino culture. It's to the point where, let's say, if you were to go to the Philippines, a lot of the people, they don't really work just because, you know, times are a little tough. The economy is a little tough. Mm-hmm. But one out of every 2-3 houses in a neighborhood, there is a karaoke machine happening.
Oh, yeah.
Like a whole on karaoke machine happening. And it's just endless. Whether if it's in the morning, whether if it's daytime, especially in the nighttime, there is always singing going on.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You also play instruments too. Yeah. You're self-taught?
I'm self-taught. I taught myself guitar, I believe, grade 9, so that was like 2013. And then piano, I started to teach myself when I started doing music production, just because it was really crucial, really important. So that was about like 2016 17.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
that's not easy though.
God, no. No, like I can't call myself a virtuoso, but like I at least know my basic chords and know what's happening.
I tried that during the COVID time, but it's pretty hard.
It's hard.
Because like I have nothing to do, so I'm like, okay, let's learn how to do piano, but it doesn't work. So I ended up, because I hang out with my friends from Filipino too, so like most of my friends that I'm hanging out right now, they are Filipino. So we all end up like singing karaoke all night.
Yeah, karaoke is huge. It's like in the blood. Mm-hmm. Like very in the blood.
Karaoke was also a big thing at Pinoy's own Parliament, like Mickey mentioned before, where we actually saw you perform. So it seems like performing comes naturally for you, but like I kind of want to know, because it's been like 8 years since you've acted on stage, are you nervous at all?
Like, I'm always nervous. Yeah. Whether like I'm definitely nervous for this one, but even like when it comes to singing at a wedding or singing at a party function, whatever the case may be, even if it's people that I know, like to say a family party or whatever the case may be, I still get nervous. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I think it's just a natural thing that just comes for everyone.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit more nervous now just because it's a musical and like there's script lines. And
your
like
first time.
My first time here and my first time in like years.
Yeah. New city too.
And a new city too. So obviously I want to set the impression and set the bar pretty high.
Yeah.
So hopefully the opportunities get better from there.
Of course. Yeah. But again, probably just that like fake it till you make it kind of thing. Like, yes. I'm not nervous.
Yeah. Maybe the first night I'll probably have to fake it till you make it. And then maybe as I go on, it'll probably feel more seamless and more natural from there.
Yeah. How have you been like preparing yourself? Like, what have those rehearsals kind of been like for you?
It's been good. When it comes to like memorizing lines, sometimes I'll have to like, you know, when I'm at home, I'll like look over the script. Sometimes I'll like read it in my head. I have a bad habit of not practicing my lines at home like I would, like as I were to perform, because that's a very important thing to do when it comes to, you know, studying your lines, is to say your lines like you're actually performing it. But thankfully, when I'm at rehearsals, things have been working out in our favor. But this Saturday is actually the due date where we have to be off book. So I'm a little bit nervous for that. So I've been looking at my script a little bit more lately. But yeah, I'm sure like things are fine. There's a saying when it comes to like plays and musicals that things don't gel together up until like the week of. Sometimes maybe days before like showtime.
Yeah.
Like it'll just click and like, oh, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, and finally I got the word now. So it's called clumsy.
Clumsy.
So I'm trying to think of like dancing. What is that? But like it can be clumsy in this character from what I see from you describe that you can be like funny, comedian. So which means you can be clumsy.
Yeah, like if I trip over my own foot, that's like it fine. Works. It works in my character, it fits well.
Yeah, but and if you like forget your line, like at least you get the whole meaning of the whole sentence, I think you should be okay.
Exactly. As long as I can find a way to redeem myself if I do forget a line, we'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it fits in the character, which I'm thankful for.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like one more thing that I want to ask is that like you think that like your culture actually like influenced you to become a little boy? Like this is actually like the question from
Pinoy's on Parliament. Yes. Yeah. Yes, Filipino culture, when it comes to showing their like love and emotion, music is actually a huge part of that. They show their, like the way that they show, I guess, their love would either be through song. Whether if it's singing a song or even making a song. I've noticed it in the past, whether if it was colleagues that I know that were also Filipino, or just people who just like to sing in general. A lot of the songs that we do like to sing are love songs. Funny enough, like love song ballads, like a lot of like Celine Dion, like anything that will make your heart pull. Yeah, we love it.
And do you think that you can use that to incorporate with your like play that you are going to use?
That, unfortunately, no, because I don't really have a love interest in my musical. I'm very just like a comedic sidekick. So I can't really put that into perspective. So I was actually thinking about that, I think the first week.
Okay.
I was like, ooh, is there a way I can implement this and this? But then I realized, I was like, oh, I can't.
It's not fit with your
it
character.
Doesn't even fit. Yeah. Unfortunately, but that's okay.
And I was actually kind of interested to ask, like, I don't mean to expose you for having not seen the movie, but like maybe there's a way that not having seen the movie, you can totally form your own perception, your own character of Nicely.
Yeah. Actually, I think someone said something along those lines too. They were like, okay, you didn't watch much of it, but just based off reading the script lines and all that, you can like curate and find a way how to make it your own.
Yeah.
Which is actually more fun. Yeah, because it doesn't give you, like, I guess, a set expectation of, like, how to do it. And then it also gives you an opportunity to maybe stand out. Totally. Whether like it might be good for some people or not, but as long as I can stand out and be unique, that will catch eyes, that will grab attention.
So to make in chart is mean that you can interpret it your own character with your understanding.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're like, I'm a translation right now.
I mean, it makes sense. Like I've been saying, I think that you have a super interesting musical background. So I'm excited to see how this production goes and what you do bring to Nicely Nicely. This is like
I'm very excited. I know. I heard it was a very classic performance too. And I was like, oh, wow. I was like, ooh, okay. The stakes are high. Yeah, I got this. Yeah, I'm excited.
And now like the ticket is on sale or?
They are. I believe the website, I think it's lostbaggage.square.site.
Okay.
If you search up, I think Lost Baggage Musical Theater Ottawa, mm-hmm. On Google, it will show up as the website, and then it'll show the prompt to buy tickets.
Oh wow!
Mm-hmm.
Nice. You should show up there, and you have.
Oh yeah, I guess if you could have auditioned in Vancouver, in Toronto, in Winnipeg, what made you choose Ottawa as the city to audition or to?
Ooh, I like that. So the reason why I didn't look into Vancouver too much, just because I was more focused on my musical production, like music producing journey in Vancouver, just because there was more networking within that realm, as opposed to Ottawa, where Ottawa is, I found that there's a history of very good actors. Whether it's from a musical or whether it's from a play. And I've seen that people who like start off here, sometimes they'll go off Broadway, which is like New Jersey or somewhere in the East Coast. And then afterwards, as they develop, and obviously the end goal is New York in Broadway. And obviously New York is not that far off from us either. It's like,
that's the end goal.
Yeah. It's like what, 10 hours drive from us right now? Yeah. It's not too far off.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I'm just catching that the theme of the setting of Guys and Dolls is also in New York.
So yeah.
Interesting.
I know.
Wow, well, can't wait to go see it.
Yeah, I'm running about to the end of my questions, but for you, what do you think viewers can be most looking forward to about this performance, about this theater community in Ottawa and Guys and Dolls?
I think just for us, just to express ourselves and just show what talent we have in Ottawa. I feel like Ottawa sometimes gets overlooked, mm-hmm. just because I also learned that there's a stigma when it comes to Ottawa that it's boring. I don't know when did that happen or why did it happen, but like apparently whenever people think of Ottawa, they're like, oh God,
yeah, it's a thing.
Ottawa, are you serious? I'm like, what's wrong with Ottawa?
Mm-hmm.
But then I do get it, but I feel like at the same time, there's a lot of diamonds in the rough. Like, there's a lot of gems.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, like, if you just take time to really look. So just hopefully giving the audience, like, the best show that we can give. And I know that will be possible.
Yeah.
And just showing how different people can share their talents.
Totally.
Yeah.
I got another question for you, okay?
Yeah.
Because the arts community in Ottawa, I do think, is very beautiful. You know, my partner did a performance of Into the Woods, and
wow.
I was at, you know, front row, throwing roses, doing the thing. but for you, this performance is coming up. I know you're like a little nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you looking forward to seeing in the audience?
So obviously, my partner Venus. I always like to perform in front of her. Just to show, you know, just to show what I love to do, what I really love to do, as well as some of the friends that I've made here. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see them. And in general, just honestly, everybody, just like, even if the seats fill up, like, doesn't matter who it is, as long as they enjoy the show at the end. Mm-hmm. And if I can make an impact of any sort, I'm good. Yeah, I'll be satisfied. Like, that's if I get like one compliment, they'll be like, oh my gosh, you are amazing. I'm like, okay, one person, I'm good.
There you go.
Yeah, nice. I did something. Yeah.
I feel like, you know, you can share your how you be lovable boys by just make people love the character. That's the most important.
Yes. See? Exactly.
I was like, I'm going to answer that question. That's why I'm like, okay, I answer for you now. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. With my pleasure to have you.
That was Ryan Mendoza speaking with CHUO's Lauren Rolston, Mickey, aka Kitty Pink, and Marcela Gonzalez. And now, CHUO's Marcela Gonzalez walks us through the carbon tax with an update on the climate policy that's been criticized as a dumpster fire.
The carbon tax went up on Monday. This is despite conservative protest. The 23% increase caused commotion on Parliament Hill 2 weeks ago, when Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre called a non-confidence motion over the hike to dissolve the current government. A confidence motion asks members of Parliament to vote on whether they have confidence in the current government or not. Poilievre's motion failed on Thursday, but had it passed, it would have meant the loss of power for the Liberal Party and the calling for an election. The motion came after Prime Minister Justin Trudeau had affirmed that he wouldn't be backing off on the increase. However, Poilievre isn't the only one seeking to stop it. 7 out of the 8 provinces under the carbon tax have asked the federal government to drop the hike, including Ontario. The nationwide protest against carbon tax group on Facebook, which has more than 150,000 members, planned protests on the borders of the affected provinces and in front of the parliament. But what is this tax? And what is each side arguing? According to Environment and Climate Change Canada, carbon pricing is a way to recognize the cost pollution has on the public and shift them towards the ones responsible for the carbon emissions. That means that the regional emitters are charged with the cost of healthcare due to heat waves and diseases, or those associated with property loss because of rising sea levels, in an effort to push them into reducing their emissions. This can be done by either a cap and trade system or a carbon tax. The cap and trade system is basically a market for carbon emissions, in which companies buy and sell emission units and trade permits. A carbon tax is a fee imposed by the state to companies that burn or distribute fossil fuels, resulting in higher prices for gasoline or heating oil. In Canada's case, big decisions had to be made after committing to reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 30% from 2005 levels by 2030. So Justin Trudeau's government released a national carbon pricing plan in 2016, requesting all provinces and territories to have a carbon pricing system in place. Some provinces, like British Columbia and Quebec, already had systems that achieved the requirements set by the federal government. But for those that did not, Ottawa laid a carbon tax in 2019. This tax started being $10 per ton each year until it reached $50 in 2022. And since then until 2030, it has been raised to $15 per year. This translates roughly in an increase of around 3 cents per liter of gasoline per year. This carbon pricing plan has come with a lot of opposition, with contenders claiming that it hasn't made a meaningful difference on the decline of emissions, that it would only add to the current inflation, and that it is burdening citizens with even more taxes. In response, the Liberal government mentions the Canada carbon rebate payments, which are part of the carbon pricing plan. This is a fixed amount of money the federal government returns to households affected by the tax every quarter, with lower income families benefiting the most of it. So instead of imposing more misery and suffering on Canadian people, as Poilievre said in the debate 2 weeks ago, over 80% of Canadians received more money back than what they had paid in tax throughout this program, as is stated by a 2020 report by the Parliament Budget Officer. Regardless of who is right, the only certain things are that tensions remain high between parties, and that the tax went up as planned. As to what happens to the annual increase after the 2030 goalpost, the Environmental Climate Change Minister, Stephen Guilbeault, told CTV News that they haven't made any decision.
That was CHUO's Marcela Gonzalez on Canada's carbon tax rollout. I'm Noah Blatt. Thanks for tuning in.
And that's it for this week's episode of The Mosaic. Thanks so much for tuning in. Music for The Mosaic is by Helizna. To listen to this episode and previous ones, go to chuo.fm/podcasts. If you're interested in joining our news team, email news@chuo.fm. We'll see you next week, Thursday at 1 p.m.